So this is, I envision this as a two-parter, discussing the issue of how we deal with somebody who is suspected of violating Shemitah at its core, fitting into our year-long learning of Shemitah, but it's a broader question, how you deal with somebody who is suspected of violating mitzvos in terms of avoiding providing assistance for them in that process. So what I thought I would do is, for today, look at the basic issues of Lifnei Iver in Misayaya through the lens of the Mishnayos in Shavuos, as well as other sources and certain cases that come up, and then begin the discussion about ways in which I might have to worry about helping him in his Avera. What I'm going to be not dealing with really in this discussion is the issue of Tochacha. In other words, we're dealing with the question of how to avoid helping him sin, as opposed to the question of how do I prevent him from sinning, which is really its own parsha, its own discussion. I'm going to assume here either that you have a separate plan for how you're going to do Tochacha, or that you know that it's inappropriate in that circumstance. They're not only will not listen, but they'll become negative, and so on and so forth. All the different reasons why one might not provide instruction to somebody else. But we begin with Lifnei Iver. Right? Lifnei Iver, I brought you in source Aleph, the Pasuk, Lo Sikalel Cheresh, Lifnei Iver, Lo Sitein Mechshol, Ve'Resem Elokacha Ani Hashem, do not curse the one who is deaf, that's its own discussion, Lifnei Iver, Lo Sitein Mechshol, do not put a stumbling block in front of the blind, you shall have Yirah from Hashem, you shall revere God, and therefore don't do this, meaning, as I think Rashi probably notes on the Pasuk, even though you could theoretically get away with it, right, the Iver is not going to know that you're the one who did this. Nonetheless, you should know God is watching. So there are multiple levels to this issue of Lifnei Iver, not to cause somebody to stumble. On the most basic level, it's that I'm not supposed to directly cause somebody to do something that is to his own detriment. So I brought you the Sifra, the Medrash on that Pasuk, in source base, or piece of the Medrash. Hayonot al mimcha eitzah, if he asks you for advice, al titen lo eitzah she'enah hogenes lo, so don't give him advice that is inappropriate for him. Al tomar lo tse b'hashkama, she'ib kapchuhu listim, don't tell him get up early in the morning and go down the road, knowing that he's going to get attacked by bandits. Tse b'tzaharayim b'shvil she'ishtarev, or telling him to go out in the afternoon so that you know he'll get hurt, the heat will dry him out. Even though in these cases we don't see a direct personal benefit for you, even it's simply a case of harming him, although I think you could render it as a case of maybe you're benefiting by whatever harm befalls him. And in fact, the Medrash continues with more explicit cases, like he's thinking about selling his field, and you say, yeah, go sell your field and get a donkey, because you have a donkey you want to sell, and you'd much rather have land. So in these cases, you are directly causing someone to do something that you believe will bring him harm. But even indirectly, assisting him or leading him into doing something wrong is inappropriate. So usually when I teach this topic, I give an example from the Rambam. The Rambam writes that you're not allowed to cause somebody else. Never mind. The Rambam writes that you're not allowed to cause somebody else to steal by buying stolen goods from him. In other words, if you believe that somebody is dealing in stolen goods, by you buying from him, you are encouraging him. And so therefore that's inappropriate. That's usually the case that I bring. But since, again, we're dealing with Shemitah as the context, I brought you the Mishnah in Shavuos in source Gimel. This was the first of the Mishnayos that I had sent out in the Mar Makomos early in the week. Elu kelim she'ein ha'uman rashay l'mochram b'shvias. The following kelim, the following implements, are not to be sold by a craftsman during Shemitah. Macharesha, a plow, v'chol keleha, as well as all of its different tools. Ha'ol, the yoke for the animals when they're plowing. V'hamizre, which is a winnowing fan of some kind. V'hadeker, some kind of a spade. All of these are tools that you would use in farming. Don't sell it to somebody during Shemitah. Now, as we're going to see, we're talking here about selling it to somebody who is already suspected of violating Shemitah. Meaning, it's entirely possible that, during Shemitah, I envision hopefully a drop in the need for plows and shovels and whatever, and therefore maybe my store is going to go on sale. right? We're going to say we need to, you know, move merchandise. We need some kind of income here. So therefore, we're going to make a sale. And you know, David Eli Grumman, being a fine, upstanding Israeli citizen, is going to say, I'm going to buy now so I can farm next year. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with doing that. So if I know that he's somebody who is, you know, someone who, or I should say, if I don't know that he's a violator of Shemitah, maybe there's room for me to say, I assume he's all on the up and up, and therefore I can sell it to him. However, if this is a guy who I know is suspected of violating Shemitah, then I can't sell him these tools, which really have one function, which is farming. As opposed to, as the Mishnah continues, tools that might be used in a mutter way. Aval mocher hu magal yad hu magal katsir v'agala v'chol keleha. You're allowed to sell him, let's say, sickles and scythes, the sort of things which he could use when he goes into the field to cut down hefker items. Right? Some discussion about what he would use and how he would use shinui, not relevant for right now. The point is, items that could be used in a permissible way, that you are allowed to sell. As the Mishnah concludes, zeh klal kol shemalachta miuchedes la'avera asur. If it is specifically used for a prohibited purpose, you're not allowed to sell it to this fellow. But otherwise, you are allowed to sell it to him. So on that Mishnah about selling the tools, the Rambam writes, poetically, in Source Dalet, his parish to that Mishnah, Amar Hashem, he says, God says, in case you were confused about where it came from, Amar Hashem, v'lifnei ver lo sitein michshol, you shall not cause the blind to stumble, ha-kavana bazeh, shemi she'ivra ozo hatava v'hadeos haraos, if a person has been blinded by desire, or by bad ideas, ideas of which we do not approve, al tazrehu al ivrono v'tosif lahat oso, so do not assist him in his blindness, do not add to his going astray. Right? The assumption is we are possessors of truth. We know what he should be doing. He has been blinded either because he hungers for whatever he's going to produce or because someone taught him wrong. Either way, you can't contribute to it, and that would be called a violation of Lifnei Iver. Yeah?
Just a question on the fact that you can't sell him any of the items which are like strictly prohibited. Is there any idea of embarrassing him? If you have a whole bunch of people, I'm like, okay, yeah, you're fine, you're buying for next year, you're fine for next year. We think that you can't do this, so we're not going to sell to you. Is that like
right.
Common? So
that's a very interesting question. We are going to get to a Darkei Shalom discussion, whether this week or next week, and I think that may come into play in that conversation when we're going to talk about the difference between dealing with an associate who knows you and who expects things and not, you know, as opposed to somebody who has no demand on you and no right to you. And I think that we may need to discuss that in that case. But as a ground rule, we're saying don't sell him. It's Lifnei Iver. Yeah.
Do we not sell to him if we know him to be specifically a violator of Shemitah or just a violator of Torah, like mitzvahs in general?
Also a very good question. So normally the rule is we do not extrapolate from one Isser to another. Meaning, if I have somebody who I know does not observe kashrus, let's say, that does not mean that I have to assume that he violates Shabbos, you know, for example, or Shemitah for that matter. There are certain averos which are viewed as so fundamental that if you violate this, we assume you violate everything. And Shabbos is always the key example where they say someone who would violate Shabbos, and I don't mean violate Shabbos because of lack of knowledge. I mean someone who says, no, I'm not interested. So then we do have that concern, and we extrapolate, but you're right. When we say here, we mean he is suspected of violating Shemitah, not that he's suspected of wearing Shabbos. Correct. So that's Rama's formulation, and he continues to say, therefore, you are not permitted to assist sinners in sinning. You are not allowed to cause anything that will bring them to sin. We have to act in the opposite way. So writes the Rambam. So that's our principle of Lifnei Iver. However, there is a well-known exception to the rule of Lifnei Iver, which is, what if my assistance is not critical for him? He could just as easily get whatever it is that I'm contributing somewhere else. So he's not going to be able to buy at my store. I am not selling him a plow, so I'll go next door, and I get the plow there. So why should I lose the chance to make the sale if at the end of the day he's getting a plow regardless? Or to put it a little bit differently, perhaps less greedily, realistically, I'm not putting a stumbling block in front of him. There's a stumbling block there anyway. So what's the difference? That's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, source Hey. They're dealing with the case in which the person already possesses whatever prohibited item we are talking about, and we've said that that makes things different. And the Gemara says, why? V'chi islay, I added in the words in brackets, v'chi islay, chepta di isura, lo amar mishum iver lo siten mechol. Just because he has the item already, therefore it's not called putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. V'atanya, Brisa says, Rabbi Nassan says, Minayin shelo yoshid adam kos shayayin l'nazir ve'ever v'nachayl v'nei noach, Talmud lomar v'lifnei iver lo sitein mechol. How do I know I'm not supposed to extend a cup of wine to a nazir, to extend Eber Menachai to a non-Jew, right? That's one of his isurim, that's one of the mitzvahs b'nei noach. And they quote you the pasuk, Talmud lomar v'lifnei iver lo sitein mechol. So look, the key in noting, in understanding that brisa is the word yoshit. What is lehoshit? To extend it to somebody else, implying it was here already anyway. I didn't do anything. I just moved it from here to here. But fundamentally, the item was present, and yet you're telling me I'm in violation of Lifnei Iver. So, v'ha'acha techilo yahavina le'shakli ihu, here, even if you don't give it to him, he's going to get it anyway. U'kavar mishum lifnei iver l'sitein mershol, and yet I am in violation. So the Gemara answers, Hachavamayaskinan, what is our case here? Dekoi betray ivre nahara. The answer is, it's where they're on two different sides of the river. The cup of wine, or the Eved Menachai, is on one side of the river, and the Nazir, or the non-Jew, whoever it is on the other side of the river, and by being Moshit, I am actually making it available to him where it was not previously available. Dekanami, and I'll prove it to you. Diktani lo yoshit, velo ktani lo yitain. Shmamina, because the word in the Brisa used was lo yoshit, which means still, it implies that I have to extend it towards him, possibly crossing the river, as opposed to lo yitain, which would have been handing it to him. It's like, he's right here and the thing is right here, and I'm just making a short-range transfer. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah does indeed distinguish and say that in the event that he has the item, I would not be in violation of Lifnei Iver. I'm only in violation in the event that I make it available where it was not readily available before. And the Ramah quotes this with approval in source Vav. The Ramah Yeredeh Kufnun Aleph says, Yesh Omrim, some say, Hada Asur Limkor Lahem Dvar Mashayachim Lavodasam, when we prohibit selling idol worshippers items that are relevant for their worship, that's where they don't have others like it, or they could not purchase elsewhere. But if they are able to buy elsewhere, then you can sell them whatever you like. Surprise. Some are strict. But the practice is to be lenient, like the first view. The person who is a person of spirit, a person of strength, so he can be strict for himself. But that's the idea. And you note, and the postgim note, that he calls them machmirin rather than osrim. In other words, he's very clearly, Rama is clearly telling you, this is a level of stringency above and beyond the letter of the law. Really, if they have it, nothing wrong with you with you providing, if they have access. And in fact, the Chalkas Yaakov in Arachayim Samach Zayin Vav uses this to permit owning vending machines that are available to people on Shabbos. Right? If I have a company and we have vending machines in public places, do I need to shut them down over Shabbos? Do I need to worry, perhaps, that Jews might use them? So part of the discussion is, are they in a Jewish area or an area where customers can be assumed to not be Jewish? But the Chagas Yaakov says, if he doesn't go to your vending machine, he's going to go to another vending machine. The fact that you're not there doesn't mean the market disappears. So, therefore, he says, it's not a problem of Lifnei Iver for you to have your machines there. The Titz Eliezer in Yud Tes Lamed Gimel Aleph deals with this in terms of doctors who do medical exams, let's say an ultrasound, that will pave the way for an abortion or for taking organs from a patient where it's not appropriate. So he says, not the doctor who's actually involved in the surgery or in the abortion, that's a separate discussion, but he's doing preliminary tests. And he says, realistically, so if you don't do the ultrasound, that means the ultrasound's not going to happen. Someone else will do the ultrasound. So on that basis, he says, lifnei iver is not relevant. I promised you interesting practical cases. We get interesting practical cases. The Mishnah Rishona uses this to explain the Mishnah that we just saw in Source Gimel, right? The Mishnah had said, I'm not allowed to sell him items which only have one use, and that is a prohibited use. But I am allowed to sell him multi-use items. And just assume he's going to use it for a good purpose, even though he's somebody who's suspected of violating Shemitah. Why is it that I'm allowed to do that, he asks. In Source Zion, Sarech Iyun, this requires examination. Am I mutter? Why am I permitted to do this? Kevin de Suffolk de Oraisuhu Lishihu, Shema Leisur Kona, Vilifne Iver de Oraisu. He says it's a Suffolk de Oraisu here. This is a biblical violation. If he ends up using it for something wrong, you have violated the law biblically. The rule ordinarily is doubt in a biblical matter, we go strictly. So he gives a whole series of answers. But one of his answers is what I bring here, but Sarach Lomar, you have to say, Dahabamayaskinan, what's the case here? De ikanami uman echad oved kochavim. There's another craftsman who sells these tools, and he's not Jewish. The nymph said, De Ein HaYisrael Over. It should be Over, not Oved, that's my typo. Mi de Oraisa. So the Jew is violating, biblically, violating with Ne'iver, De Belavdi De Matzimiz Ben Me'ove Kochav. I'm sorry, but it's the De Ein HaYisrael. He's not violating it biblically, because even without him, the fellow could buy from the non-Jew. That's the idea. However, there are three possible limitations to this heter. Everyone quotes this heter. When you deal with questions of lifnei iver, everyone says, well, he was going to get it without you, therefore it's okay. But there are three potential limitations to this heter. The first potential limitation to the heter is from Chavos Yair, Rav Yair Bachrach. He dealt with a very interesting problem. There was a fellow who had a share in a butcher shop, and he was a butcher. I don't remember the specifics of the case precisely at this point. But he had access through his butchery to non-kosher meat, the stuff that got trafed up, whatever it was. And his general practice was that he gave it to a certain non-Jew, a friend of his, as a favor, whatever it was. Again, I don't remember all the details, but it doesn't matter for our purposes. The point is, he used to give it to a non-Jew. It's non-kosher meat. Let the non-Jew have it. Why not? You're allowed to give him non-kosher meat. And then the non-Jew went and married a Jewish girl. So now the question is, you're giving him the non-kosher meat, which he's going to take home, and they're going to have for dinner. So is this a problem of lifnei iver now that you are doing so? On the one hand, if you don't give it to him, he's going to get non-kosher food elsewhere, right? On the other hand, you are directly giving it to him. So Rav Yair Bachrach says something important in Source Ches. He says, Uma gam shebenidon zeh ha-yehudi nosein la-ha-arel b'ha-kafa v'al-cheshbon below damim. Aleisek Masa Umatan. He says, in the case that we're dealing with here, the Jew gives it to the non-Jew on a tab, on some kind of an account, without any exchange of money. So again, I'm not remembering exactly whether there was ever any payment or never any payment, how exactly that worked, but he's saying, your deal is a very favorable deal. And he says, he says, this fellow was not going to be able to get the meat on such terms elsewhere. He says, in my humble opinion, this is the rule. Wherever we say that you're allowed to do it because he could get it elsewhere, that's where he has the option of getting it elsewhere, however he likes, to whatever extent it's easy or cheap with you, he has to be able to get it elsewhere, not where you are providing him an advantageous way to get the whatever prohibited item we're talking about. And he goes on to talk about this in other contexts. I brought you a more full quote than we really need right now. But the point is that the first restriction on this possibility of arguing whether he can get it somewhere else is that he has to be able to get it just as cheaply, with just as simple an availability, as he's able to get it with you. If he's going to have to travel 100 miles to get it, that's not called Chadi Berdinara. Right? That's not called, it's on the same side of the river. If he's going to have to pay double the price, that's not called Chadibra Dinara. Some difference in price, probably still okay. But this is going to require some sensitive calculation. The second point that's raised is that perhaps the other resource, the other source for this item, has to be non-Jewish. That's the position taken by the Mishnah LeMelech in Hilchos Malva Vilova. He deals with a case of lending somebody money on interest in a pro. Well, take a look. He says the Yesh Lachalik Velomar Dlo Huter Lelova Lilvos Bishvil Shalova Acher Rotze Lilvos. He's talking about the case of borrowing money, not lending money. The deal is that if I don't borrow money from him on interest, so someone else is going to borrow money from him on interest. So he says, we have to distinguish and say, you're not allowed to say, well, let me be the one to borrow from him, just because someone else otherwise will do so. Mishum de'ef shalova yachzer bo v'lo yilva, because maybe the other borrower will back out. It could be that he's going to back out. And what he says is that if the other person is a Jew, then maybe I do have to assume the other Jew will in fact back out. V'yesh lahavi raya ledinzeh, and he says you can prove this from a Tosfos in Chagiga, mimashakas of Tosfos Perkein Dorshin, der maschalei mosin divrei Torah la'akum. D'hacha mari afilu hecha de'ika akum achir sherotze lelamdo. He's talking about the issue of a non-Jew wants to learn Torah. So he is going to come to me. He could just easily go to some other Jew. Tosfos writes, the reason it's not Lifnei Iver is because there's a non-Jew who wishes to teach him. That's what Tosfos writes. So the Mishnah LeMelech says, why did Tosfos say there's a non-Jew who wants to teach him? Umdelo ka'amri de'ika Yisrael shirot alam. No, he didn't say there's another Jew who wants to teach him. Shema mina de'eno nifter mishum Lifnei Iver b'shvil she'esh Yisrael acher sha'over. He says, you're not exempted from Lifnei Iver if the other person who would do it is a Jew. You follow? Is that what we're saying? What we're saying is the argument of if I don't help him with the Isser, someone else will help him with the Isser anyway, doesn't apply according to the Mishnah LeMelech if the other person who would help him is Jewish. The Mishnah LeMelech's argument as I presented it here is because maybe the other person is a Jew, so he won't do it. He'll back out, he'll change his mind, he'll change his ways. You could also make the argument that the reason why is because you're saying, let me do the Avera, as opposed to someone else doing the Avera. You haven't improved things. The Avera fundamentally is going to take place either way. This comes up, Rabbi Yashiv was asked the question, I have a boss, and my job is that I have to bring the boss lunch every day. The boss says to me, go bring me lunch from a treif restaurant. Am I allowed to bring him the lunch? Or actually, come to think of it, I had a practical case. When I lived in Pennsylvania, we had Meals on Wheels in the community. And in addition to Meals on Wheels, some of the people who delivered, they were kosher Meals on Wheels, but some of the people who delivered also would go shopping for the person. And the person would give them a list, and they would go shopping, and they would bring it. So what do you do if the Jewish person who gave you the list included non-kosher items on the list? How do you handle that? Do you say, well, you know what, if I didn't do it, someone else would do it anyway, and therefore Lifnei Iver is not relevant? So Rabbi Yashiv, in the case of the boss, says, if the other person who's going to end up bringing him the food is a Jew also, then you can't argue, well, if I don't do it, someone else is going to do it. That's his position. However, the Ksav Sofer disagrees in Yerodea Pei Gimel, and does the Tzitz Eliezer. I brought you the Tzitz Eliezer in Source Yud, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, in Yud Tes Lamed Gimel, still dealing with the discussion about doing the medical exams that will pave the way for an inappropriate surgery. So he says, Rabu Aposkim Hachokim al Mishnah LeMelech. He says, many authorities disagree with the Mishnah LeMelech on this point. Vesovim She'enenu Over Ze'al Lifnei Iver, say he's not in violation of Lifnei Iver. Afil B'chiyai Gavna, even in this case, Mikevin She'al Koponim Him Lohu Yim Tzuachim She'asu Zos. Because, bottom line is, somebody else would do it, and that's good enough for me. So this is a machlokes, but it's worth thinking about. It's an important consideration. And then the third consideration, and I'll do a quick summary of what we've done so far, but the third consideration is brought by Rashi and Gittin. The Gemara in Gittin is in Source Yud Aleph. This is a key Gemara for discussions about Lifnei Iver. And I just brought you the Mishnah, which is actually one of the Shviyas Mishnayos that we saw. But it's brought in Gittin as well, and Rashi on that Gemara is the Rashi I wanted to see, so I brought it to you from the Gittin context. But the Mishnah in Source Yidalev says, Mash'elas isha l'chaverta chashuda l'ashmi is nafav u'kvar v'rechayim v'tanur. A woman is allowed to lend to her friend. And note the use of the word her friend, because that's something that we're going to come back to when we talk about the Darkei Shalom issues and so on. But a woman is allowed to lend to her friend who is suspected of violating Shemitah. A nafa, a kavara, these are types of sifters, like for flour. Rechaim, a mill to grind up grain. Tanur, the use of the oven. Avalot tavor velo titchanima, but she may not actually sift and grind with her. Mash'elas le'eshes eshes kavar mash'elas le'eshes ama'aretz nafa u'kvara. A woman who is part of a family of chavrus, where they're careful about tuma and tahara and truma and meiser, so she is allowed to lend to a woman who is not part of such a family. She's allowed to lend her a sifter. She's allowed even to be borer v'tochein and merakid with her. She can sift with her. That's allowed. The reason being because there's no tuma occurring yet inappropriately for the truma and meiser or whatever it is that you're dealing with. There is no concern for tuma yet because nothing's gotten wet. Avol misha tatil hasamayim lo tigaima, but once the water is put in, then she can't touch it. Because you're not allowed to help people sin. And in all of these cases, they only permit because of darkei shalom. So part of the question is, when we says v'chula in all these cases, which cases does he mean? But if you take a look at Rashi, Yud Beis, Rashi says, v'chula lo amru, she'itiru l'hash'ilam kelim, the permission to lend them implements, u'lesayam b'lo sha'as avera, and to help them when they're not actually doing the avera atzma, the sin itself, elam ipnei darkei shalom. He says the only reason it's permitted is darkei shalom. So, the post can look at this and say, Rashi is telling me, I am only allowed to lend them tools because of Darkei Shalom. Presumably, I am not the only person on earth, or even the only person on the street, who has a sifter. Why is it that my permission is Darkei Shalom? Shouldn't my permission be they're able to get it elsewhere? Why is Darkei Shalom the justification? And so some argue, therefore, that in this case, saying they can get it elsewhere won't help. Why? Because the that seems to be a rejection of the idea of saying, well, they can get this elsewhere. Now, Rashi here seems to be saying the idea they can get it elsewhere is insufficient on its own. You need more grounds to permit than just that. Or to say it differently, we would distinguish between a case in which I have the opportunity to help somebody else for the sake of my own profit, and a case where I have the opportunity to help somebody else sin, and if I don't, there's going to be fallout. And what we're saying is, according to this Rashi, I am allowed to say, you know what, if I don't help, somebody else will. I'm allowed to say that only in order to prevent disaster, to prevent enmity. Then I'm allowed to do it. However, I'm not allowed to do it just as a justification for my financial gain. Exactly. Then I would not be allowed to do it. I need to have a better justification in order to be allowed to do this. So right now, all we've identified as disaster is Darkei Shalom, the loss of peace within the community. We have to see more about it, especially because financial loss may well qualify as disaster too. So we have to qualify that. But that right now, Rashi is just giving me this novel idea that I need to, that it isn't sufficient. I can't just defeat Lipnaivir by saying, well, he could get it elsewhere. I need other mitigating factors as well. This is only one contributing mitigating factor. David, I'll leave it.
I was just thinking there's a Mincha Shlomo when he talks about having a non-religious person over to your house for Shabbos.
Yep.
Specifically about hand washing.
Yep.
He says, if you push him to wash his hands, this person is not, you know, non Shomer Torah Mitzvot, but he's a contributor to the community and he's a proud Jew, as it were. But if you were to push him, then it would lead him to even want to disassociate himself from the community that much more.
Right.
So should you try to get him to follow the halacha, or should you just kind of leave him be and eat without washing?
Right.
And he says you should let him eat without washing because you're actually doing a lesser Lipnei Iver. Right. On one hand, you're over the Lipnei Iver that he's not washing, but you're you're keeping him within the fold. So.
Right. Rav Shlomo Zalman is actually drawing on a Chazon Ish, which we're going to see, I hope, next week. The Chazon Ish has this very interesting approach in discussing Shvius. It's in, I think it was Yud Beis Tess, the very worth seeing, in which he talks about the greater and lesser Lifnei Ivers and the possibility that I may help him in the sense that I may avoid giving him an item that he would use to violate Shemitah, but on the other hand, I am going to cause him to hate other Jews. And therefore, I have actually made a worse michshol. I have made a worse stumbling block. We have to discuss that because there are nuances. There's a difference, for example, between selling him a tool he's not supposed to use or lending a tool that they're not supposed to use on the one hand, and then on the other hand, actually helping him to sin by handing him food actively that he's going to put in his mouth right away. You know, the directness may be an issue, so we have to talk about that. To sum up what we've said so far, Lifnei Iver applies both to directly causing someone to do something that is not in his best interests, and even indirectly, doing a background step. However, if my contribution is accessible elsewhere, as the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, if it's on the same side of the river, then we are justified in doing what we do. The Rama approves of it, although he notes that some are strict. But we have limitations on this, and the potential limitations are, first of all, is the other option as affordable as mine and as accessible as mine? Possible concern is the other option coming from someone who is Jewish. And then third, Rashi says, this is not necessarily sufficient in and of itself in order to justify it. You may also need another mitigating factor to combine with it, such as the Darkei Shalom factor. The one more issue within Lifnei Iver is what we call Lifnei de Lifnei. You could look on your sheet at source number Yud Gimel. There is a prohibition brought in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah against selling people items which are normally used for Avodah Zarah. So, for example, I can't go selling rosaries. Okay? Rosaries for Jews are Avodah Zarah. For non-Jews, it depends on how they're used. But the example in the Gemara right here is going to be Lavona, frankincense. It was normally used as an incense for the idol. So I'm not allowed to sell them, these items. However, I am allowed to sell them in bulk. The assumption being he's not stocking up for his next decades of Avodah Zarah, but rather he must want it for some other use of the item. Buying in bulk is a sign that it's not for Avodah Zarah purposes.
For him to distribute to his fellow Avodah Zarah.
So that's exactly where we're going with this. Take a look at the Gemara in Source Yud Gimel, Baruch HaKivantem. The Gemara says, Tana, umi kulan, and I added the words in brackets, umi kulan, from all the items, meaning, Devar Mishas or Limkor Lahakum, the items you're not supposed to sell to the idolaters, Mochur Lahen Chavila, you could sell it to them in a big package, you could sell it to them in bulk. The Kama Chavila, so how big is a big package? Pirish Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, Ein Chavila Pchusa Mishlosha Manin, he says at least three mana. Fine. But why am I not concerned? We don't think of him as a generous person. He's going to share it with everybody, but maybe he's going to sell it to everybody. He's a middleman. He bought it wholesale from me, and then he's going to break it down into small units, and he'll distribute it. So Amar Abaye, Alifne Mifagdinan, Alifne Delifne Lo Mifagdinan. Abaye's answer is, we are concerned about Lifne Iver. We're not concerned about Lifne Lifne Iver, meaning there's another step in between. My concern would not be I am selling it to someone who's going to use it as Avodah Zarah. Rather, my concern is I'm going to sell it to him, and then he is going to sell it to somebody else, and they are going to use it for Avodah Zarah. I don't have to plan so far ahead. That's the statement of this Gemara here in Avodah Zarah Yadalit. But there is a problem. And the problem is Source Yadalit. Source Yadalit is just a short while later in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, and it's a story. Rabba Zavin Ahu Chamrli Yisrael HaChashur Limkor LaAvodas Kochavim. Limkor LaOvei Kochavim. Rabba sold a donkey to a Jew who was himself suspected that he would sell to idolaters. There is a prohibition against selling certain animals to non-Jews. It's a Gemara there in Avodah Zarah. Gives various reasons why. Not relevant for us for right now. But he's going to sell the donkey to a Jew. But that Jew is somebody who's known as someone who would sell it to non-Jews. Maybe that's his business, for all we know. So Amar le Abaye, my taima of admarachi. Abaye says to him, "Why did you do this? Why did the master do this?" Because Rabba is Abaye's Rebbe. Why did the master do this? Amar le Anali Yisrael Zvini. He said, "What's your problem? I sold it to a Jew." Amar le, to which he replied, "V'ha azilu mazvan lelo v'kochavim." You know what he's going to do. You know he's going to turn around and sell it to an idolater. To which his response is, "La'ove kochavim kamazbin liyisrael lo kamazbin." What, you know for sure he's selling it to a non-Jew? Does he have a sign up in his store that says we only sell to non-Jews? He could just as easily sell it to Jews. So therefore I need not be concerned. That's Rabba's response. On this, take a look at Tosfos in Source Tesvav. "La'ove kochavim mazbin liyisrael lo mazbin v'chulei." He says the conclusion of the sugya is that you're not allowed to sell it to a Jew if that Jew is suspected of selling it to somebody inappropriately. "V'im tomar," but you might ask, "Maishna milifne delifne dele'el." I don't understand. On Daf Yud Daled, regarding selling the Lavona, the frankincense, we said you don't have to worry multiple steps back. Lifne delifne. So why is it that when you're dealing with selling the donkey to the Jew, you have to worry, if I sell it to the Jew, and he's going to sell it to the non-Jew, that's also lifnei de lifnei. What's the difference? V'yesh lomar, so Tosfos' answer, I think there's another answer you could offer, but Tosfos' answer is, yesh lomar, da'asa mari ba'ove kochavim she'eno muzhara lifnei iver, because the case you're dealing with, when you're talking about selling the Lavona, right, the first case we saw in Source Yud Gimel, that was talking about selling it to an idolater, who then may turn around and sell it to other people, and in doing so would violate Lifnei Iver, because he would be providing them with it. However, non-Jews don't have the mitzvah of Lifnei Iver. Lifnei Iver is not one of the mitzvahs of Bnei Noach. He's not doing anything wrong. If the non-Jew goes ahead and sells the frankincense to idol worshippers, he's done nothing that is considered a violation. So I'm not concerned that he's going to turn around and sell it to his non-Jewish neighbor. That's not, he didn't do anything wrong with it. There's no big deal. But here we're talking about a Jew who is suspected. I am selling it to a Jew who's going to sell it inappropriately. It's his isser. We are instructed not to do anything that's going to cause a Jew to violate. Meaning, when we say lifnei delifnei is not a concern, that assumes that there really are two steps in between. I'm selling it to the non-Jew, and the non-Jew is going to do whatever he's going to do, which is permitted for him. And then the person to whom he would sell it would use it inappropriately. That's where we're two steps removed. However, lifnei delifnei is not going to be allowed if what that's going to mean is that I am going to cause a Jew to do lifnei iver to somebody else.
If it is a known thing that that Jew will sell to
the non-Jews. Or to non-Jews where he's not allowed to do that, where that's a lifnei iver problem.
Like the case of the frankincense. So this guy, he's not known to be, like assuming that he was a Jew, he's not known to sell he's not known to distribute his products to, like we don't know if he's been.
In the case of the frankincense, I'm selling it to a non-Jew.
Okay.
Right? And the concern is that he might play middleman and break it down for them for the
opium. He might, but the case in selling the animals is a case in which we know that this guy's a known seller of animals, right?
So in other words, another answer we could have given is that this is a chashud case.
Yeah.
Interesting. Why don't we give the answer? Why doesn't Tosfos say the difference between Yudalid, where you are allowed to do it, and Tesvav, where you're not allowed to do it, is that Tesvav is dealing with a chashud. And Yudalid is not. So I think he has an advantage. By giving the answer that he gave, he gains. Because the answer that he gave will cover whether it's chashud or not. In other words, if I take your answer, then I'm restricted in my heter. Right? My heter applies specifically where I'm selling it to somebody who is not really suspected of going and doing something wrong. Right? Whereas if I take Tosfos' answer, then what we're saying is
we can expect him to do wrong things if he's not a Jew. So it's a
But what Tosfos is saying is, I am not allowed to cause something wrong to be done. The way to look at let me say it a little bit differently, and I think better. When we say lifnei delifnei is permitted, right? I don't think I rendered it properly in translating lifnei delifnei. I think that's what's causing the confusion. Lifnei delifnei doesn't just mean that there is an extra step before whatever iser I would have caused. Lifnei delifnei means that my action is going to cause somebody else to violate lifnei iver. I didn't violate lifnei iver directly. However, as a result of my actions, somebody else could violate lifnei iver. I.e., I sell someone avodah zarah material, and he is going to turn around and sell it too over the avodah zarah. Right? I am, that's that case in particular, we're going to see another case shortly. I'm going to sell my donkey to him, and he is going to sell it to somebody who's going to use it inappropriately. And what we're saying is that if I'm doing that, and the end user is going to, I'm sorry, not the end user, and the person I'm selling it to is not Jewish, then it's okay. Because he has no mitzvah of lifnei iver. So the fact that I caused him to violate lifnei iver, he didn't violate anything. Chashud, not chashud doesn't matter then. According to this theory. Whereas if I sell it to a Jew, and I say, well, I didn't make him do lifnei iver, it's already, I am a step removed from this whole thing. The answer is no, because fundamentally, I am causing him, I'm enabling him, maybe that's a better word, I'm enabling him to violate lifnei iver. So lifnei to lifnei will be prohibited if I am providing it to a Jew. Again, to make sure that I'm being clear. Because this comes up in a lot of practical cases. What we're saying is, I am not allowed to provide I am allowed to provide a non-Jew with an item which he may well turn around and sell to someone who's going to use it inappropriately or give to someone who's going to use it inappropriately. That's fine. What I'm not allowed to do is provide it to a Jew who's going to turn around and give it to someone inappropriately, because the very act of giving it is itself a prohibition for this Jew, and therefore I am doing lifnei iver to him. So to give you a practical case, let's say I am going to... I need to come up with a parallel case for non-Jews. It's easy to come up with a case for Jews. What I need is a case for non-Jews. I'll give you a Jewish case first. I am a caterer. I know that they're having a kiddush. And at their kiddush, the family has ordered fish platters as well as meat platters. Right? And we don't eat fish and meat together. Right? For whatever crazy reason, the Gemara Psachim, Tzaras, and, you know, omega-3 fatty acids. But we're not supposed to serve meat and fish together. On the other hand, what am I doing? All I'm doing as the caterer is I'm delivering the platters. Then, they're going to put them out on trays, which may include putting them out together, such that people end up eating them. So this is actually perfect. This is a perfect case. If the wait staff is not Jewish, and they're the ones who are going to be plating everything and putting it on the trays, then there's no problem of lifnei de lifnei. Whether it's a good idea or not is a separate discussion. whether the Vaad should be putting its stamp on this is another story. But the point is, if I'm giving it to non-Jews who have no Isser of lifnei iver, then I didn't do anything wrong. Because I am not concerned about lifnei to lifnei for the end users. I didn't provide it to them. Someone else provided it to them. And the person I gave it to, the waitstaff person, is not Jewish. And therefore he didn't violate lifnei iver either. Whereas if the waitstaff are Jewish, then I am causing the waitstaff to violate lifnei iver. Because the waitstaff are Jews, and they're going to put out meat and fish together in front of the people eating at the kiddush.
Does it not matter, though? Does it not matter in the first case, though, that you know that they're Jewish? That, like, okay, so you're skipping the lifnei iver part with the non-Jewish waitstaff, but you know the end result are Jews who potentially could be eating this fish and meat together. Doesn't that make a difference?
And we're saying, no, that's a step removed.
Isn't lifnei iver all about the end result of the
so what we're saying? Well, it would if we were to say that I'm concerned for lifnei de lifnei, right? Which we've said in the Gemara, we're not concerned. If we were to take that approach, how far would we go before stopping? Because you could go many steps beyond this. Right? Every action that we perform, hypothetically, could lead to somebody doing something wrong.
But even though this part of the Gemara says we're not concerned about it, the end of the story is that Rava chases after the guy to try to get the donkey back.
Right. Because, well, that's what Tosa says. The Maskana is that we are concerned.
Right.
The Maskana is that we are concerned, and the distinction is the, you know, who's involved and so on.
Right.
But that's the, but that's what we're saying here, is indeed, I am not allowed to cause somebody else to violate Lifnei Iver. So Lifnei DeLifnei is a concern where the middle person in this story is Jewish. But it's not a concern if the person in the middle in this story is not Jewish. You're right that we would not want to do this. But am I in violation of Lifnei Iver? No.
What about the case of Chashud? If it's a Jew and we're not sure if he's going to sell it to... We're not sure if he's going to violate the Lifnei Iver. We can suspect that he might, but we don't know.
So then it's like any other Isser, right? I'm not allowed to provide a Jew who is Chashud with the means of sinning. Unless we have... We haven't gotten to the fun stuff yet. Meaning we have to talk about what's called a Taliyah. Which is to say, what if I have reason to think that he may not use it the wrong way. Right? He could use it the right way. Right? Classic example. I'm not a use case, but still a relevant case. I have a Jew who I know who lives 5 miles from my house. I'm having a bar mitzvah on Shabbos. Am I allowed to invite him if I think that he is somebody who is not so careful about Shabbos? Do I have to worry that he's going to drive? Or can I be tolek? Can I depend on the possibility he could walk? It's 5 miles, but yeah, he could. Like, where? How far am I allowed to go in relying on those sorts of possibilities?
Yeah.
And applying it here, I mean, you know, in this case, for example, it's entirely possible that people are going to look at it and know for themselves they don't serve fish and meat together at home. And so they'll think before they put both of them on their plate. You know, I mean, it's not as though we're dealing with an uneducated market. We're talking about where it's a Kiddush and Shul, and it's meant for a population that's careful about these things, so they don't have to worry, as opposed to where it's for a chashad case. Here it also could become more tricky, because we seem to say that we avoid eating fish and meat together because we view it as dangerous, whatever that means. So therefore, you're now leading somebody into danger. That's a whole other discussion. And what are, you know, Lifnei Iver or no Lifnei Iver. But that's the Lifnei DeLifnei, and I'll show you a case where it comes up. Take a look on your sheet at Source Tez Zayin. Bring it back to our grounding in Shemitah. Source Tez Zayin. Mishnah says, Hayotzer mocher chamesh kadei shemen v'chamisha asar kadei yayin. Shkeinar kolavi min ahefker. I make barrels. Okay, I make cooper. I make barrels. And I want to provide barrels for people's wine and oil during Shemitah. Well, at what point do I have to worry that they're using these barrels not for hefker stuff that they brought in, but actually for produce that was either guarded inappropriately or that was bought inappropriately? How, you know, at what point do I have to say something's wrong? So he says, up to 5 barrels for oil, up to 15 barrels for wine, because that's the quantity people would bring from hefker. One of the mafarshim on this Mishnah says, that's silly. If it's hefker, you bring as much as you can. There's no cap on what you're going to bring. Because what we mean is how much you would bring from Shemitah produce. That's really what we mean. That is to say, in Shemitah, you're only going to get a certain amount, and this is the amount that we can assume is really from produce that is Shemitah produce that was made hefker and appropriate. V'imhevi yoser mikan mutter. If he brings more, it's permitted. So there's a big debate as to how to read that line. What does that mean? If you bring more barrels, you're allowed to sell more barrels. If he brings more oil or more wine than that, you're still allowed to provide it for him. That's a question we're going to have to come back to eventually, maybe. But the rest of the line is the key. Umocher la'ovdei kochavim ba'aretz uli Yisrael b'chutz la'aretz. I am allowed to sell more than this number of barrels to a non-Jew in Israel. I am allowed to sell more than this number of barrels to a Jew outside of Israel. And I'm not concerned when I sell it to the Jew outside of Israel that he might turn around and either bring them to Israel and use them for inappropriate produce, or sell them to a Jew in Israel who will then use them for inappropriate produce, that I am not concerned about. Why am I not worried about lifne de lifne? Right? Maybe I sold it to the Jew living in Cairo, and he is going to turn around and sell it to a Jew living in Tiberia. And then he's going to use it for Shemitah produce inappropriately. It's lifne de lifne, right? And you told me that lifne de lifne is asur, where there's a Jew as the middleman, because I'm causing the Jew in Cairo to violate lifne either. Yeah?
Well, you could say we have reasonable grounds to suspect that he's going to sell it to a non-Jew, right?
Right. So if you take a look at source number 17, that's the answer of the Tiferes Yisrael. He says this is way too far a concern. The Tiferes Yisrael says, B'chutz l'aretz, she'ein sham din shviyas, where there is no law of Shemitah, someplace really outside of Israel. V'lo cheshin shi'achzer b'yimkrim l'chashud ba'aretz ta'avele lifne de lifne. I'm not concerned that he's going to sell it to somebody who's suspected of violating Shemitah in Israel, which would be lifne de lifne. V'af de l'Yisrael afil lifne de lifne asur, as we saw in Tosfos, even though lifne de lifne is prohibited when this person you're going to cause to sin is a Jew, al kopanim ein machzik in iser mimakom lamakom. He says we don't really have to assume that remotely that he's going to sell it from Cairo to Israel.
Back to somewhere else outside of Israel.
Yeah. He says that far we don't have to go. That's his answer. There's another answer brought by the Mishnah Rishona, but I wasn't in the mood to retype it, so I didn't bring it on your sheet. But the Mishnah Rishona says we are concerned for lifne de lifne when the middle person is a Jew, but not here because, he says, number one, it's chayei nefesh. What we're dealing with here is people's needs for survival, whether it's the business of the person who's selling the barrels or the person who needs the barrels for his wine and oil. That's number one. Number two, he says we have multiple talios, multiple reasons to think that nothing is going to go wrong. Maybe he isn't going to sell the barrels to anybody, right? Maybe he's using the barrels in Cairo. There's no Shemitah there. He could have produced as much wine and oil as he wants. Or maybe he'll sell them to somebody who is not chashud, who's going to use them entirely appropriately. Maybe he's going to sell them to somebody who's going to use them after Shemitah. We have multiple reasons to think that nothing is wrong here. So the upshot of this segment here is, not only am I concerned about lifne iver lo sitein mechshol, but I also have to be concerned about not causing another Jew to violate lifne iver lo sitein mechshol. I can give it to a non-Jew, because a non-Jew isn't prohibited from lifne iver. But to a Jew, I'm not allowed to. Got it? Assuming that, it's a reasonable possibility. Where it's reasonable to say this isn't going to happen, like where I sold it to the guy in Cairo, that's already okay. So to apply it to our Kiddush case, as the caterer, I am, if I have Jewish waitstaff, I do have to worry about them providing meat and fish together to Jews. However, to apply this point that the Pharisee Yisrael and the Mishnah Rishona made, if it's reasonable for me to think that the waitstaff knows what they're doing, and they're going to put the fish out at one end of the room, and the meat out at the other end of the room, or they're going to put up a little sign that says, you know, meat, fish, right? So that people are warned, hey, wait a minute. If it's reasonable for me to suspect they're going to do that, then I'm good. I can be told that. You follow? That's the idea. Which brings me to our last point in this sort of introduction to issues. It's a related issue. It's called the problem of misayeya, assisting somebody in wrongdoing. This comes up in all sorts of cases. The Mishnah Halachos in Dalad Lama Gimel uses this to prohibit the vending machines on Shabbos. We said before that maybe the vending machines are okay, and that's the Chakas Yaakov's position, because he says it's not lifnei iver because the guy could get it elsewhere. However, the Mishnah Halachos, Rabbi Nasha Klein, disagrees. And he says, what you're doing is more than just lifnei iver, it's misayeya. You're actually aiding him in the wrongdoing, because the wrongdoing is in buying the item. You are providing him with the means to buy it. You are the seller. You are part of the inappropriate transaction. It comes up also for people who practice law, and specifically where they get involved in writing wills. What happens if a Jew comes to you and says, I want to write a will that's not halachically done, so that he's going to disown people who should not be disowned, or, well, you know, various ways to mess up a will. But the point is that you are now assisting him. Ah, but he can go anywhere else. If he doesn't go to me, he's going to go to some other lawyer. Yeah, but I'm misayeya. I'm now an active agent in the wrongdoing. that perhaps should be viewed as being a greater concern. The truth of the matter is that you could argue it should be a lesser concern. Because fundamentally, Misayeya is a derabanan, not a del raisa. I brought you Tosfos and Sois Yudches. I'm not going to read it inside, just in the interest of time. But Tosfos there indicates that Misayeya is fundamentally a derabanan. If it's a derabanan, where does it come from? So one view, the Mishnah Rishona on the Mishnah in Shvi'as Hey Vav that we saw in the beginning about providing Kalim and the Uman and all that, says that Misayeya is actually a function of Lifnei Iver. It's a derabanan on Lifnei Iver. If I'm not allowed...
It's the more active involvement, though.
It is the more active involvement, but it's really just a logical extension. If I'm not allowed to cause him to stumble where I'm not part of the actions, the derabanan say, we're going to make a decree. Also, you can't be an active agent, even where Lifnei Iver won't apply. That's one way to look at it. The Ritva, which I brought you in Sorsi Tess, you can see it there, understands it as a function of Kol Yisrael Raven Zebazeh. Or Zelazeh, depending on your edition. We are all guarantors for each other. I am responsible to make sure he doesn't sin. So therefore, I certainly can't help him sin. Or another view, similar view that I've seen, is that it's a function of the mitzvah of tochacha, the mitzvah of telling others right behavior. If I am obligated to instruct people in proper behavior, I certainly am not allowed to cause them to sin. So, all sorts of different explanations for where this derabanan comes from. But there are limiting factors on the derabanan liability. And I'm going to explain them outside, although you'll see, chav, chafal, chafes, you'll see it there. Number one, if I am not helping directly, I'm only providing a background step. That's not called misayaya. Example, the Maharsham was asked a question, I brought it in on the sheet, in Source Chaf, the Tzitz Eliezer discusses it as well for doctors. But the Maharsham's question was, what about if I have a property, I have a store, and I'm going to rent it out to a Jew, and the Jew is not Shomer Shabbos, he's going to keep the store open on Shabbos. This comes up all the time, right? You can envision it for yourself. You're going to become one day a real estate magnate, and you're going to have properties, and you're going to have stores that you can lease out. And the Jew is going to come to you and say, I'd like to rent out the store. And you're going to say, that's great. And then you're going to realize he's going to run the store on Shabbos. Are you in violation of anything? Do you have to make sure that the Jews who rent out your stores are going to close on Shabbos? Right? It's going to be the Chabad Gay Plaza. Maharsham says no. Why? You are not called Maseyaya. Because the store, the physical plant that you gave him, is not actually what is causing the violation of Shabbos. It's what he does within the space. So you're not called Misayeya by furnishing the space to him. That's the argument that the Maharsham makes to permit. That's number one. Number two, it's only an issue if you are assisting during the Avera itself. And that's brought by many poskim, the Meshiv Tavar, Tzitz Eliezer, Ksav Sofer, Binyan Tzion, the Maharsham that I mentioned, they all note this, and the proof is from our Mishnah in Shvi'as, in Source Chaf Aleph, which said, you're allowed to lend the person who is suspected of being not careful with Tumah and Tahara, you can lend them Kalim, right? But you're not allowed to help during the action itself, right? So you see that it's assisting during the action that is specifically the problem. And then the last very interesting hat there is if the fellow is a mumer who would do it anyway. Where the fellow is someone who has rejected Torah anyway and said, I'm just going to do what I want to do, for whatever reason they have, then this prohibition does not apply. And the Shach mentions this in Source Chav Beis. He says, if you're dealing with somebody who is a Jew who simply says, forget it, I'm not interested, then Misayeya will not be a concern. There's more to discuss about why that's so. It's not really something I should throw into the last minute and a half of a shiur, but I just did. But the upshot of this is we've defined Lifnei Iver. I'm not allowed to cause other people to stumble, but I may be okay if my contribution is accessible elsewhere from a non-Jew in a way that is just as accessible and inexpensive as my approach. The non-Jew piece, we said, was subject to machlokas, whether it has to be available from a non-Jew specifically. According to Rashi, that heter of, well, he can get it elsewhere, is insufficient on its own. You need something else with it as grounds for leniency, like Darkei Shalom, we mentioned. We said Lifnei de Lifnei is a concern. I'm not allowed to cause another Jew to then violate Lifnei Iver. But if he's not Jewish, he's allowed to violate Lifnei Iver. There's nothing wrong with that. And then we gave the Misayeya, this Derabanan concern, that in addition to not causing people to stumble by giving them the means of error, I'm also not allowed to assist them in error as a derabbanan, which is funny that it's a derabbanan, given that it's so much of a stronger involvement than the deraisa. But the limiting factors for misayaya are, if what you're providing is a background step, it's okay. And clearly that won't be a lifnei'ver concern either, right? The case of renting him the store. Because again, he can get stores elsewhere and presumably just as cheaply and so on. The issue of, you know, that Rashi would have to deal with, but the misayaya is only wrong if it's during the Avera itself, as seen in the Mishnah in Shavuos. And if you're dealing with somebody who has no interest whatsoever in anything Jewish and is going to do this anyway, then again, Misayaya may not apply, as stated by the Shach. Right, there's more to say, but next 2 weeks, what I want to do is deal with the question of when am I allowed to be Tola? When am I allowed to assume that Paul is on the up and up and he's actually going to use it for a proper purpose and not an improper purpose? Where do I apply Darkei Shalom concerns and trying to keep the peace, even though I know that I'm actually going to enable somebody to sin, which has all sorts of very practical ramifications, unfortunately, in people's lives. So God willing, that will be next week. Shkayach.